Greetings, Earth Explorers. Welcome to X Squared Radio, where the past meets the future. I'm your host, Brooks Agnew. In here, the results are always positive. We explore the mysteries of the universe and of the Earth. Whether you are driving across the country tonight or listening on the web while you're working on your favorite project, you are about to learn more about who we are, why we are here, and what we may become that you thought possible. We might go a little past your imagination, but have no fear. You will be safely traveling with us. Keep your arms inside the vehicle, recline your chair, and look out the window as we launch X Squared Radio. And good evening, Earth Explorers. Glad to have you here with me tonight, coming to you live from Western North Carolina. AccuWindow forecast about 41 degrees and clear. If you want to be part of the program tonight, and believe me, I surely want you to be part of the program, you can call us anywhere from off planet, 530-413-4511. If you're east of Earth, it's 530-413-4515. And if you're west of Earth, 530-413-4520. Those of you that are listening by cell phone, Bluetooth, welcome, welcome. If you don't know how to do that, I'm going to tell you right now, 712-432-0075. Then put in the access code 318-116-pound. You'll be able to listen to the program, not be able to talk to us, but you'll be able to hear everything that's going on. So if you want to be a part of the program tonight, just call in. We'll cue you up and get you in. Tonight's guest, you're really familiar with, Nick Redfern. He's going to be on in about 6 minutes, so hang in there. We're going to cover his book, The NASA's Conspiracies. The solar wind is 426.6 kilometers per second, and sunspots, 1133 and 1131, are very active and visible. Solar activity surged on this morning when the sun erupted three times in quick succession, hurling a trio of bright coronal mass ejections into space. A preliminary analysis suggests that none of the CMEs will be geo-effective. That is to say, they will not affect Earth. They missed us again. As you know, earlier in the week, we didn't cover it last weekend because it hadn't happened yet. There was a 700,000-kilometer long filament that snapped out into space. Fortunately, it was facing away from Earth, so we did not see any geomagnetic activity from that either. A preliminary, the expanding clouds should miss our planet. Are these CMEs related, these three? Well, according to images from NASA's twin stereo spacecraft and the SDO, the clouds emerged from three distinct blast sites separated by great distances. In each case, a magnetic filament erupted, one near the sun's southeastern limb, one near the north pole, and one on the far side of the sun. Because all three eruptions occurred within a matter of hours, the coronagraph images suggest a single three-lobed cloud. However, NASA maintains they are three separate CMEs. Well, I for one am just glad they missed us again. Nobel Peace Prize candidate, nominated by this program, X Squared Radio, yours truly, Brooks Agnew, Julian Assange, says, and I quote, "Publishing improves transparency, and this transparency creates a better society for all people. Better scrutiny leads to reduced corruption and stronger democracies in all society's institutions, including government, corporations, and other organizations. A healthy, vibrant, and inquisitive journalistic media plays a vital role in achieving these goals. I can tell you right now, there is no crime in running and bearing and exposing well-vetted, legitimate whistleblower documents to the general public. To assert that the dark deeds done in the secret of back rooms at the expense of the public are not the crime, but rather the revelation to the general public of those deeds is the crime, is absolutely false. I want you to know we here at X Squared Radio are part of that media. Those of you that believe that Julian Assange should get the Nobel Peace Prize in a clearly unbiased effort to flood the dark corners and back rooms of corruption with the light of public disclosure. Make your desire known, please. Yeah, that's good. I'd like to see a show of hands. That's fine. Let's do something else. The key to freedom and liberty is a free press with an unswerving dedication to the truth. May the truth continue to march onward. Looks like Brett Favre will have another day to heal his shoulder as the game is being moved to Detroit due to heavy snow. That's right, heavy snow. Up there in Minneapolis, the roof of the Metrodome collapsed last night. There are still a lot of logistics up in the air, but they'll try to do everything to make this a quality NFL game for the Vikings and the Giants, Lions President Tom Lewan said. This storm is early and indicative of a burly winter in store for the Northern Hemisphere. Proof, I guess, that global climate change is just a myth. By the way, during the same period, it was 103 degrees in Australia. Just thought you should know. There were 32 earthquakes in the last 24 hours, with 8 over 5.0. None were over 6.0. Also, this in the news today, very important. It appears Navy scientists are not satisfied with the world's most powerful ionospheric heater as a super weapon. They set a world record Friday during a test of an electromagnetic rail gun, a tractor-trailer-sized weapon that sends a 20-pound projectile rocketing through the air at 7 times the speed of sound. The futuristic gun was tested twice at the Naval Surface Warfare Center in Dahlgren, Virginia, and the first shot generated 33 megajoules of force out of the barrel, a world record for muzzle energy, the scientists said. By the way, 1 megajoule is a unit of energy roughly equal to the energy generated by a one-ton vehicle moving at 100 miles an hour. 2,000 pounds at 100 miles per hour. Just a little math, and you can see that a target hit by this 20-pound projectile would experience a collision equal to a 66-ton block hitting the target at 100 miles an hour. That's pretty bizarre. That's a lot of energy. No explosion necessary. Range, 100 miles. No one at the target would hear or see a thing. The Navy's response? It's exhilarating. Elizabeth DeAndre, the Railguns Project Strategic Director, told the Post. Quite. Remembering the future, the physics of the soul and time travel did reach a rank of number 4 in the spiritual motivational category and number 9 in the genre of self-help. The overall rank, with more than 9 million books currently listed on Amazon, reached 204. If you missed the offer on Coast to Coast, not a whole lot I can do about that except extend it, which I'm going to do to all of you. You can purchase the book and get the audio version for free. If you go to rememberingthefuturebook.com, purchase the book there, and you will get the entire audio version, unabridged, read by me. So if you're not a great reader, don't worry about it. I read it for you. Please visit our affiliates that help us stay on the air. Actually, the first one, we don't get anything out of it. We want you to be prepared. As you see, weather is extreme. Our good friends at 1-800-PREPARE.com put together food storage, emergency preparedness gear, procedures, equipment to help you take care of yourself and those that you love and care for at very, very reasonable prices, most of the time with free shipping. Put in my name, Brooks, B-R-O-O-K-S, and you'll get an extra 10% off. as you check out. 1-800-PREPARE.com. Check it out. Few reporters have been so prolific and done such a good job of investigative work as our guest tonight. In 1996, he began publishing articles in periodicals like X Factor, I Spy, and then a book by Simon and Schuster called The Covert Agenda. Then in 1998, the FBI files about their top UFO secrets. He has kept ufologists fed with the facts and enthusiasts aware of the presence of alien craft on Earth. Tonight, we're going to discuss one of his latest works, The NASA Conspiracies. We'll be back in 40 seconds with our guest, Nick Redfern. NASA is one of those organizations that has, for many decades, commanded respect, never questioned, always looked up to and aspired to by youth and enthusiasts the world around. But is NASA as clean as they claim? And are they so deserving of our trust? Nick, welcome to the program. How are you? Nick, are you there? I know he's dialed in. We're just waiting on the studio to bring him up. Nick's joining us for about 1 hour tonight. The book is called The NASA Conspiracies, The Truth Behind the Moon Landings, Censored Photos, and The Face on Mars. Nick is a full-time author, lecturer, journalist. He writes regularly for UFO, Fate, Fortean Times, and Paranormal Magazines. His previous books include Contactees, which we've covered on this program, Memoirs of a Monster Hunter, and There's Something in the Woods. He has appeared on numerous television shows, including the History Channel's Monster Quest and UFO Hunters, the National Geographic Channel Paranatural, and the Sci-Fi Channel Proof Positive. So, Nick, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Brooks. How's it going?
Oh, it's going awesome. It's so good to have you back on the program. This latest work, The NASA Conspiracies, is really fascinating.
Oh, thanks.
You know, I grew up in the early 60s, and I watched the first landing on the moon, I assumed, live on television. And I was blown away. I thought it was genuine. I thought it was real. And my mother-in-law, who's, you know, kind of a country girl, was the first one to really adamantly make the case that, you know, that moon thing, that was all put on. We never landed on the moon. And I thought, boy, she doesn't know what she's talking about. and then I read your book, and I was like, oh, my gosh, you mean there's a possibility that they really didn't want to fail that bad, that they would try to fake it?
Well, yeah, I mean, certainly there are, you know, there's a whole culture that believes the moon landings were faked. You know, I point this out in the book, but I think a lot of it stems from, you know, the fact there's a lot of justified mistrust about governments, you know, what we hear. People today, I think, very sort of jaded and skeptical about a lot of things they hear. And inevitably, that sort of impacts on all walks of life, you know, and I think it's sort of like it just sort of typifies, unfortunately, the culture we live in, where a lot of people find it difficult to know what to believe and what not to believe.
Well, it's like, you know, we have two main things about space travel that really fascinate mm-hmm. us. I mean, we all of us have known somebody at some time in our lives that's worked for NASA, and their integrity is mm-hmm. just unquestioned. They're mm-hmm. engineers, they're technicians, they're programmers or whatnot.
The two aspects about space travel that really hit home with us today, even sci-fi enthusiasts. One is our attempts to visit other planets, and the other, of course, mm-hmm. is other races' attempts to visit us. Mm-hmm. And I kind of figured that they'd never come to odds with each other. But I was so fascinated by this book, you know, and as usual, it's packed with facts and quotations that are, you know, new to me. The one in the first chapter really opened my mind. I had to meditate on this for a day just to fully take in the impact of it. And that was the quote by Mac Tonies. Let's see, it's on page 20. Let me see if I can turn to it really fast. Because it just makes it so clear what the issue is here. Why we haven't seen, you know, global first contact. He says, mm-hmm. I propose that this intelligence, if there's an extraterrestrial intelligence, has played a significant role in occasionally hastening our species development, as well as keeping us in periodic standby state, rendering us less likely to destroy ourselves. In a way, the human legacy has been scripted to conform to an alien template about which we know little or nothing. But the available historical, mythological, and experiential evidence tends to support a largely benevolent raison d'etre. Perhaps we're being groomed in preparation for our own singularity, after which the others could have no choice but to deal with us as equals.
Yeah, Mac made a lot of, you know, very good thought-provoking observations. And granted, you know, to an extent, we have to theorize, but he was very good at that. And I think, you know, I'd agree with a lot of what he said. I think there is a real UFO presence amongst us, but it does seem to be very much remaining in the shadows, you know, in the sense that it's not here, at least not yet, to destroy us, but equally it hasn't helped solve all our problems. And I kind of liken it to, you know, the whole notion of the mother bird, you know, eventually making the baby birds leave the nest. It's kind of like if too much interference ensures that the person, or equally the race or the culture, doesn't progress at its own speed. You know, it's rather like the whole idea of somebody who's 50 years old living with their parents, you know. Not if there's anybody listening in, there's anything wrong with that. But, you know, I'm joking aside, it is like that thing. It's like if you don't get out there and learn for yourselves, then you're never going to grow. And I think that's the situation that we possibly see with the UFO phenomenon. Perhaps it's given us a few subtle hints, pushes here and there, etc. But at the end of the day, you know, it's up to us to try and perhaps use those subtle hints that we see every now and again and that are evidence of something going on, but it provokes, because it's kind of like not too clear, it provokes us and challenges us to look further and come to our own conclusions and our own growths, if you like.
Well, it's kind of hard to, you know, sit back even casual, even kind of numb and ignorant to it all without watching TV 24 hours a day. To deny that something is going on. You know, I kind of looked for, by now anyway, some kind of global first contact, you know, a kind of floating convoy of ships that shows up on the mainstream news and people are looking up and then we say, oh, I guess they're real. And then I'm going to play a clip for you from the New York News. This is broad daylight over New York City on October 13th of this year. I mean, this comes as close to global first contact as I can get.
It's because of a mystery in the sky. Is it a balloon, a UFO? Whatever it is, it sure has a lot of people talking. Eyewitness News reporter Jeff Begay is live in Chelsea, where crowds have gathered. Jeff, what's this all about?
Well, Sade, we don't know, quite honestly. And when I got this assignment, I thought for sure somebody in the newsroom was joking. And it wasn't until we pulled up to this corner and saw the passersby looking up that we realized that, okay, maybe there is something in the sky today.
Oh, snap. Yeah.
You got it? It's a bird. It's a plane. It's
maybe Superman. Maybe Wonder Woman.
You'd rather it be Wonder Woman.
Yeah.
There is something up there, and there's been a crowd of people at the corner of 8th and 23rd Street trying to figure out exactly what it is.
I think I see it now.
Right over there.
Wait, there's another one over here?
I see
those two over there.
Earlier today, it was over here.
I think it's a balloon.
I don't know. You think it's a balloon?
Yeah.
All right.
But then again, balloons don't stand still.
Maybe we're not all just seeing things. The city is reporting that they've been getting calls about this mystery in the sky to their 311 line. So far, they don't have an answer.
What is that?
To that question either.
But what do you think it is?
I don't know.
You don't want to say
I'm
it.
Looking for the mothership.
Did she find it? Well, still a mystery. We don't know. We did make some calls, and we found out from the FAA that their planes aren't being affected by these white lights. Not that that answers the question. So it remains a mystery. Everybody out here seems to have an opinion on it. I was told that there have been some people out here just standing around looking up for about 45 minutes trying to figure it out. We're live in Chelsea. Jeff Begays, Channel 7 Eyewitness News.
Well, so there you have it. That's Eyewitness News. This is, you know, a group of lights floating around above New York City. I mean, there it is. And the strange thing is they're up there. They're changing position. They're moving. People are watching them for like, I don't know, an hour and a half. And then a strange thing happened. Nothing. No news helicopters, no chase planes, nothing. That is what blows my mind, Nick. This is a city that has probably more than any other city in the world the right to be nervous about unknown stuff in the sky above it. Yeah. And yet nothing was going on. So that's my question. What's going on? Why aren't we excited about this? Why aren't we investigating?
Well, you know, I think the question of whether or not we're investigating, it looks like there's no investigation on, maybe because we don't know about it. We're not able to probe deep enough to find who might be. But, you know, maybe somewhere at a very deep level within government or NASA or wherever, somebody really is watching. And they know, you know, the difference between something hostile like a hijacked plane and a genuine UFO. And, you know, if there's some way of kind of like identifying a genuine UFO, whether it's by its, I know, the propulsion system, maybe it leaves a particular signature, you know, in the sky or something. If they're aware of what that is and they know after 60 years they're not overtly hostile, then it may be a case of, okay, you know, it's going to be just like all the other times. Let's just not do anything. Or let's just, you know, not take any action because no action needs to be taken if they're not overtly hostile. And maybe that's why we get puzzled, you know, why was there no follow-up? Or maybe it's the precedent of knowing what these things are and that they haven't caused a problem in the past that, well, you know, let's hope it doesn't happen again so we won't scramble anybody. If they see a 747, you know, that's totally off its flight path heading for the Empire State Building, that's a totally different thing and they would take action.
Well, I understand maybe not scrambling something military to go up there and investigate, but they did send the ABC van out to run some cameras from the ground. What stops them from sending the ABC helicopter up to maybe get a closer look?
Well, yeah, I think one of the problems is with the media is that UFOs very often, they're more of a subject of entertainment. For example, you know, when you look at things like Iran-Contra, or weapons of mass destruction, or WikiLeaks, or anything like that, you know, it's perceived as being a mainstream news, serious news story where they will put, you know, a massive budget into investigating, getting dozens of journalists and, you know, feature writers, investigative journalists, that sort of thing. But when it's UFOs, it's like, oh, yeah, you know, just quickly get the story. It'll put a smile on people's faces for 10 minutes. So, you know, I think, in other words, UFO investigations by the media aren't given the same serious in-depth treatment as a what's perceived to be a mainstream serious news story gets. And I think that's the problem. It's like, well, you know, it'll fill 10 minutes at the end of the news to keep everybody in a happy frame of mind. Or if it's Halloween, you know, it'll be perfect for that. But that's far different from, you know, having an entire news team for 6 months looking into, you know, something like Iran-Contra or whatever.
Well, yeah, exactly.
And if they did do that, then I think, you know, that if they put the same effort into investigating, it's like, say, you know, a big newspaper, national newspaper or one of the main TV news companies, put the same effort and money and manpower into investigating UFOs as they do something like, you know, terrorism or, you know, who knows what, then I think we would see a tremendous more coverage on the news. And I think it just says a lot about the news services that they're just looking for a quick piece of entertainment with UFOs. They're not looking to do an in-depth piece of investigative journalism.
Well, I agree with you on that. Still, I think ABC could have switched all the viewers away from the cable channels if they'd have sent a helicopter up, not for 6 months. How about six minutes?
Well, yeah. I agree with you. I think, you know, you make a very valid point. Who knows? You know, maybe they sometimes worry about their reputations. I mean, it's like politicians. You know, most politicians, if they're asked questions, do you believe in UFOs, or if you're elected, will you do ABC, etc., most of them laugh it off because they're fearful of being known as a politician who's interested in little green men. And I think sometimes the mainstream media, you know, doesn't want to be seen as giving it too much attention because, you know, it in their eyes, it detracts from the fact that they're trying to be a serious news company and they don't perceive UFOs as fall into that category. You know, it's something for the, you know, the silly season or whatever.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you. I mean, if I was in a meeting, even as a spectator visiting Washington, and someone in the national, you know, press club or something said, Mr. President, what are you going to do about the UFO problem? I think I would turn to the person next to me and say, wow, I can't believe they asked that question. Because
yeah.
it would be that out of the ordinary. So, you know, enough of talking about the one aspect of the NASA conspiracies, and that's it's who's visiting us. What staggers my mind is the scope of deception that might be laying in the archives when we talk about how we have visited other worlds. You know, we have shared, the United States has shared, in a game of one-upmanship in space accomplishments by the human race, the latest one anyway, in everything, that is, except landing a man on the moon. In this, the U.S. stands alone. Or does it?
This is probably one of the biggest, you know, questions and conspiracies that's been labeled at NASA. You know, the idea that the moon landings didn't go ahead at all or didn't go ahead in the fashion, you know, that we're told. Some people think the landings did go ahead, but because of the effects of outer space radiation, that the film footage and photographs were destroyed or didn't come out, and so they were forced to recreate the footage. And some people think, you know, it all went ahead exactly as we're told. You know, there's, as I point out in the book, my personal belief is we did go to the moon, and I think the anomalies can be explained. But I will be the first to admit that there are, you know, a number of significant books have been published where they do point out some genuinely interesting and thought-provoking issues that keep the whole thing wide open for a lot of people. And I think, I mean, one of the things I would say is that it will be resolved one way or another when we get really good, high-quality close-up photographs of the areas where the lunar modules are said to come down. You know, and if they're not there, that's a big problem. If they are there, then it answers all questions. And certainly some photographs have been taken by space probes that have circled the moon only a couple of years ago, which do appear to show the lunar modules on the surface. The, you know, granted the pictures aren't great, but they show, you know, signature imagery. But then, of course, then people who don't believe we went to the moon say, well, these are NASA photographs, so they could be faked anyway. So it's like a circular argument, you know. It's we'll never really know, we'll never really satisfy everyone until somebody goes back. And ideally, you know, it would be an independent country separate to the U.S., where there would be no motivation, you know, to say this or that, but just to say, yes, here's the evidence, you know, we filmed it, and there are the landing sites, then that will put things to rest, you know, if the lunar modules are there. If they're not, it would just open it even wider. So.
Yeah, Yeah, well, either that or we get a telescope good enough to look from Earth up to there. And,
yeah,
you know,
yeah, exactly.
Form a line, please form a line, and we'll have a look, and you can see for yourself. Mm-hmm. Anyway, there are two questions about this. The first, of course, we've talked about, did the Apollo missions ever put a man on the moon, or was every mission an elaborate and well-kept secret con job on the world? Maybe the first one was faked, but surely the second one or the third one, geez, some of those 12 footprints have to be real. And the second question is the opposite. We did land on the moon, just like you say, and just like I believe, and we've been flying manned missions there on a regular basis ever since. Now, what have you discovered
that? Yeah, this is an area that has been brought up by a number of people, the idea that there could be some sort of sister project to the, you know, the visible face of NASA, where not just NASA, but maybe certain military agencies, etc., have developed craft far more sophisticated than the space shuttle that, you know, have the ability or potential ability to travel in space. I mean, one of the people who looked into this issue was an English guy named Gary McKinnon a couple of years ago, who literally hacked into NASA in search of top secret information on UFOs and advanced technologies, and now faces extradition to the US and potentially a very lengthy prison sentence for hacking NASA and other agencies. But McKinnon claimed to have seen photographic imagery of very unusual looking craft on NASA's computers, and also said he saw a listing of names under the heading of non-terrestrial officers. And it was like a whole listing, like a fleet listing of various people with military rankings, etc. And the whole term non-terrestrial officers sounds very, very weird. And it does sound, you know, like some off-planet, almost like the equivalent of an aircraft carrier. You know, that's how it comes across, non-terrestrial officers. And, of course, NASA and the government deny that, you know, there's any validity to this particular story. You know, they admit McKinnon hacked into their computers because that's what he's now faces potentially a prison sentence for. But they deny the existence of these files that talk about non-terrestrial officers. But in the context of what McKinnon was looking for, advanced technologies, then you do have to wonder if there is some other sort of space program going alongside the mainstream one that may have uncovered, you know, far more than we've been told officially.
Well, maybe what we need is another Julian Assange release of the truth. I mean, are there any whistleblowers on this subject working? Like what happened to Thomas Ronald Barron and his attempt to reveal the truth to the public?
Yeah, I mean, this is the thing. I mean, you know, we do have stories from people on the inside in NASA. For example, one of the things I refer to in the NASA conspiracies book is how in 1965, the FBI opened quite an extensive file on a situation that was breaking. What was happening? This was around the time of one of the Gemini manned mission launches, and the FBI got word that there was a whistleblower within NASA who was secretly releasing information to several people who were working for the NICAP private UFO research group, the National Investigations Committee on Aerial Phenomena. And that was very much like today's MUFON on the Mutual UFO Network. You know, it's just made up of members of the public interested in UFOs. But this particular person in NASA, I guess, was sympathetic to the work of NICAP and was trying to leak information out to the UFO research community on classified data relating to UFOs that was held by NASA. And one of the things he told several NICAP investigators was that on one of the Gemini missions, the craft, and obviously the astronauts, had access to some sort of tracking technology that would allow them to track four UFOs. Now, of course, you know, the skeptic might say, well, you know, that this was just people in the UFO group, you know, trying to make a mark for themselves and just spinning tales. But we know that wasn't the case because, as I said, the FBI opened a file and actually identified the fact that this was going ahead, but the whistleblower was releasing all this information anonymously and actually was covering his or her tracks extremely well, to where the FBI didn't succeed in tracking them down. But they were able to confirm that letters were being sent from by somebody in NASA to NICAP, because they got copies of the letters, which were all typed on like different typewriters. So, you know, one couldn't be tracked down to one particular person. So whoever was doing it had thought well in advance about how to avoid being caught. And, of course, this begs the question, you know, how many other whistleblowers, whistleblowers might have been doing a similar thing as well that we don't yet know about.
Yeah, and where are those documents? I mean, we
yeah,
want to see
the pictures. Thing, yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, we want to see the proof. We want to. Mm-hmm. You know, the bottom line is that there's more than just a healthy skepticism that NASA has been forthcoming. That, you know, oh, we're alone in the universe. There's no such thing as UFOs. Nobody's ever bothered any of our spacecraft while we've been mm-hmm. in space. I recall watching. I think it was a YouTube. Of the space shuttle, and there was a female officer on the craft, and she had noticed something out the window that was, you know, coming their way. It was a craft of some kind, and she said something like, "Houston, are you aware of a craft approaching us?" And Houston said, "Yes, we see it coming in." Then she reaches up on the panel and switches a switch on the panel. And it goes to stock audio of some kind. Her lips are moving, but it's no longer matching the communication that you're hearing. So she's she's having an offline conversation with Houston about this object outside the space shuttle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's a very interesting issue that a lot of people aren't aware of. You know, you can listen in. That's as, you know, a TV channel where you can listen in, and also on the internet, to live conversations with the NASA astronauts. What a lot of people don't realize is they're not actually literally live. You know, there's a several-second delay. And particularly when NASA astronauts are working on projects and flights that have a bearing on national security. For example, you know, a lot of people assume that the space shuttle, and that goes up, just launches, you know, NASA's satellites, et cetera, to, you know, probe Mars or Venus or whatever. It doesn't. The space shuttle actually launches military satellites, spy satellites for the Army, Navy, National Security Agency, all sorts of people. You know, these are highly classified missions to put satellites in orbit over China or Russia or Iran or wherever. And so inevitably on a lot of these flights, you know, when they're launching the satellites out of the loading bay of the shuttle, or there are questions about, you know, if there are any problems, the astronauts have classified communication systems that, you know, we're jammed from getting into. And there's, you know, it makes logical sense for if a UFO comes on the scene that would also apply, you know, that they would turn over to another frequency and prevent us from listening in on the conversations.
Well, we also have, you know, what conspiracy theorists call black budgets. We've recently saw the X-37B, which was kind of a NASA project, a little mini shuttle, unmanned.
Yeah.
It ran over budget, had some technological difficulties, so they gave up on it. It was quickly taken over by the Air Force, tons of money thrown into it under their rapid deployment program. And the next thing you know, boom, it's in space, and it's already completed a seven-month clandestine mission in orbit.
Yeah.
And we still don't know what it was doing up there.
No, that's the important thing. It's like people often think that if we aren't told about it, it doesn't exist. Or if Congress doesn't know about it, it doesn't exist. But you're quite right. With so-called black projects, essentially what they are, it's a situation where the project or the funding isn't available to congressional oversight, and Congress doesn't even know it exists. And the way it works is that, say, for example, you know, let's say the Air Force comes up with a new missile system and it's funded at the rate of $7 billion. However, what Congress doesn't realize is that $1 billion of that seven is secretly siphoned off to an unacknowledged project that's working, you know, deep within the intelligence community or the military. And, you know, the money gets, quote, lost, you know, or extra money or costs are placed onto another project to offset the fact that this money's vanished, you know, so it won't be missed. And nobody realizes, you know, that this $1 billion from here and half of $1 billion from there is all being channeled into something else. Nobody at an official level knows about it, apart from a very small body of people. And, you know, it allows projects and military applications and craft, etc., to be developed, really, without anybody knowing. And sometimes not even the president. You know, the president might be in office for 4 years, and the view is, well, why should we tell him or her? You know, it's like this is a long, extensive project with a lifespan of maybe 15, 20 years. We don't want some president meddling in it and telling us what to do. You know, we'll go under the radar, so to speak, and do it our own. So.
Yeah, or worse, have the first president who's, you know, happily in office for 8 years supports the project. Then the next one comes on, and the first thing he wants to do is cut the budget to the project. So best to just keep the political process altogether. Mm-hmm. I just hope they're paying
right. And I think that's why these agencies do go it alone so often, because, you know, it is sort of unfeasible to every couple of years having somebody saying, I'm going to cancel this, and then somebody restarts it and somebody cancels it. The best way to continue it is for them not to know, you know, just go under the radar and have all this money channeled through that cannot be traced. I mean, you only have to look at sometimes, you know, on the budget, how much money just goes missing that cannot be accounted for. You know, it's staggering, the amounts. We're talking literally hundreds of millions it's been at times, you know, that they just cannot find. It's gone into the Pentagon, and nobody knows where it is. It just cannot be traced.
Well, I know, I think it was this last week, or maybe it was the week before, that Congress discovered that the Fed loaned out $3.3 trillion. Congress didn't know about it until just about a week ago. Holy cow. And what's worse, they loaned it out at 0% interest. I know they can make up for that in volume, though. And the other thing is, I hope all these people that are on payroll from this money that doesn't exist are paying their income tax.
Yeah. But, I mean, you know, also, That just goes to show that you could quite easily, you know, develop some sort of highly sophisticated craft at like Area 51 or somewhere that has the ability to fly in and outside of the atmosphere. And, you know, with today's technology, you wouldn't need some huge craft like an Apollo rocket, you know, standing on this launch pad and belching out however much flame and fire and smoke, and everybody's seeing it take off. You know, in theory, as you said, you know, we're developing things now smaller than the space shuttle, which, if they can, you know, take to the skies under their own power, you know, all that somebody's going to see is like a really fast-moving, what looks like an aircraft in the sky, and then gets higher and higher till you cannot see it anymore. Then, you know, for all we know, it goes into near-Earth orbit and maybe even further, you know.
Well, we just reported tonight that new Navy railgun that can shoot a 20-pound projectile at 7 times the speed of sound. That's pretty incredible.
Mm-hmm.
Wouldn't be too hard
to... I think the important thing is that, you know, historically, if we look back at things like the stealth bomber and the stealth fighter and other craft, we actually don't... The general public and the media usually doesn't find out about these things till like 5-10 years after, when the military announced that they exist. You know, it's like the stealth bomber.
That's old technology.
You know, it was sort of rolled out the hangar in 1989. It was actually flying in a prototype format back in 82. You know, so it's like what's happening in 2010 that we probably won't know about till 2017 or something.
Well, the one thing, you know, when we talk about all of this, whistleblowers and witnesses, is the participants. You know, I can't get past the comments, for instance, by the still living astronauts in recent times. They all claim to have seen other craft besides those of Earth on the moon and during the transit between worlds. How do we deny their statements that they really were there? I mean, surely Hollywood NASA didn't try to trick them as well. I know they could tell the difference between a simulator and the real thing.
Well, no, you're quite right. I mean, for example, one of the people who's been most vocal on the whole UFO issue is Dr. Edgar Mitchell, who commanded one of the Apollo missions and walked on the surface of the moon himself in 1971. Mitchell has gone on record as not only saying that, yes, UFOs exist and they're alien, but he's actually said that, you know, insider sources within the official world have confirmed to him that not only do aliens exist, but Roswell was an alien event. Now, if this was, say, for example, you know, a high-ranking member of the military talking about something to do with the war on terror, you can bet that the mainstream media would dig into it immediately. But to me, no, it's no less credible to have a famous Apollo astronaut who walked on the moon saying, I got a briefing or got information from insider sources, you know, in the DOD, etc., that Roswell was real. Why is it that the mainstream news didn't clamor to follow up and find out who the person was that gave Mitchell the information, under what circumstances, and then knock on that person's door or phone them until that person just gave up and said, okay, I'll tell you, or just out them as saying this was the person and he will not speak to us. But for some weird reason, it doesn't matter how credible the, you know, the astronaut is, like, and respected, you know, that Dr. Edgar Mitchell certainly is. It seems to be the case that the mainstream media just does not want to touch this subject to an in-depth degree. You know, it's like, why, when Mitchell came out and made these statements, why wasn't, like, a Woodward and Bernstein put on this to investigate it to its fullest degree and get, and blow the lid on it? They didn't. They just said, and finally, you know, here's something for all you X-Files fans. That's how it came across.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, maybe they'll just, you know, switch over to their new tactic, and that's find out whether he used a condom during consensual sex and just have him arrested for not wearing one.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, it's like, I think one of the sad things is that today a lot of investigative journalism has gone, and what happens is that the media just repeats press releases from the government, you know, this is the latest news from the war in Iraq, and they publish it. It's not so much investigative journalism, it's rewriting and reporting on what the government tells them is going on.
Yep.
And I think that's one of the downsides that's changed in the world of investigative writing and journalism.
Yep, here's the official line. Well, speaking of official data, one piece of data got out there. I guess maybe it was by mistake, or maybe they didn't think anything would come of it. Voyager goes around Mars, takes a photograph, sends it home, and it looks like a face on Mars.
Mm.
Well, you know, when it first appeared, I thought, because I'm kind of a skeptic, oh boy, the space guys, the UFO conspiracy theorists are really going to take off on this one.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe what's going to happen is the next time Voyager goes around, it's going to take a photo from a different angle, and the whole thing is going to be put to rest. But that's not what happened. It looked even more like a pyramid and a face. What's the final outcome of this whole face on Mars thing?
Yeah, I mean, this is a sort of very weird story, but also important for its potential implications. I mean, for people who aren't aware of it, the so-called face on Mars is in an area of Mars called Cydonia, and it looks like a huge carved face staring up at from the surface, like a human face. Now, NASA doesn't avoid talking about it. Basically, NASA's view is that they perceive the face on Mars as being kind of the equivalent of people seeing faces in clouds. You know, they're saying, well, you're looking for something that looks like something you could recognize, and then you see a random number of, you know, lines, etchings, shadows, and it looks like a face, so you interpret it as a face. But a lot of in-depth research has now been done on this, which, to me at least, is convincing that I do personally believe that the face on Mars is evidence of some pretty ruined now, but certainly artificial structure. Now, Mac Tonis, who dug into this very deeply as well, he thought it was a combination of things. He thought it really was a very ancient, huge mesa, but one that intelligent Martian beings had sculpted. You know, in other words, it wasn't sculpted out of flat ground and built. It was actually a real mesa that was elaborated upon and carved to look like a face. Now, of course, we have a lot of implications born out of this. The fact that the face looks very human, does that mean that, you know, the Martians, if they were Martians, were human-looking? Does it mean that, you know, outer space, that every world that has intelligent life, for some reason, nature ensures that the, you know, the primary intelligent entity on the planet looks very human. You know, is that something that nature does all across the board? Who knows? Max speculated on the idea because, you know, the face on Mars looks very much like so-called Egyptian Sphinx, although the Sphinx points outward and the face is pointing upwards. And he also noted that there seem to be several ruined pyramid structures, and they do look very much like pyramids in and around the area of the face. Mac actually wondered if there was a connection with the, you know, the pyramids of ancient cultures on Earth and sculpted faces. And he wondered that, you know, if when at some point in its, you know, very distant past, we know that Mars had some sort of atmosphere and we see evidence of erosion on the planet, which seems to be evidence of shorelines of lakes and oceans, etc. So Mac wondered if at some point in its, as I said, its very distant past, because the face must be extremely old, that when the atmosphere began to degrade and collapse, perhaps sort of the last vestiges of this Martian race left their world before, you know, the atmosphere finally made it uninhabitable and actually made their way to Earth and could have been responsible for how some of these early cultures seem to spring up out of nowhere, like the Mayans, the Incas, the Egyptians, and possibly taught, you know, the relatively primitive natives about technology and building, etc. And maybe that's why some of our constructions on the Earth from, you know, 5,000-10,000 years ago look very similar to some of the things we see on Mars today. You know, maybe, ironically, as Mac wondered, perhaps we are the Martians. You know, they came here and started over. You know, so it's an interesting little theory.
Well, it would make a logical move, you know, for any spacefaring people to look out a mere 43 million miles away and say, hey, there's a blue-green planet over there. Let's try that one.
I mean, what would they have to lose, you know, at that point? So.
Exactly. And the other thing to consider, and I think you just touched on it, was, you know, the Sphinx, you know, some say as old as 25 to 30,000 years old, was built to welcome those who traveled to the Giza area by perhaps the Nile River or whatever body of water the Nile used to flow into that was right there. So it kind of, you know, looks out, you know, to the west. But to build an edifice that doesn't look to the north, east, south, or west, but faces up towards space is sort of a, you know, another kind of welcoming sign. Let's build something that can be seen from space so that we're visited, when we're visited, they know who we are and where we are.
Yeah, and I think, you know, there is the idea also that maybe if perhaps one day, you know, these entities on Mars realize, and granted it's speculative, but realize that their world, their atmosphere was collapsing, etc., maybe they constructed the face as like a final, you know, reminder, hopefully, that it would survive and then people would know that something once lived on Mars, that there was once a civilization. You know, it would be their final message, if you like, because if intelligent entities ever visited Mars, they would, if it was pointing outwards like the Sphinx, no one would see it. You know, they'd have to ensure it was seen from above. Maybe it was a case of just wanting to leave some sort of memory of their presence behind.
Well, the interesting thing that I see, and I was in Egypt just about 3 weeks ago, and I made the statement while I was there. I'm just sort of a tourist amateur, you know, kind of investigating a little bit deeper from a scientific point of view, but not officially. I made the statement that, you know, why doesn't somebody in Egypt realize what they have here and make a statement like, you know, we realize that some of this, at least some of this, was probably built anciently, and we probably did have alien assistance in putting it together. Think what they could do to their national tourism if they would admit such a thing. Then I leave, and I get here, and I pick up the next day's newspaper, and sure enough, there's the head of the Antiquities Department at the Cairo University saying, we believe aliens were involved in the building of the pyramid at Giza. So you guys are having an effect.
No, I think this is, you know, this is all important data. I mean, obviously it makes some people think that there's like an agenda going on to subtly acclimatize us to the fact that aliens are here and, you know, have somebody in this position or that position release little snippets of data here and there, and it gradually gets people acclimatized and used to the idea that aliens are here or have been here in the distant past, or even both. And I think, you know, the good thing is that there are more and more credible people in positions of authority coming forward, you know, and suggesting this. And, it seeds the idea, almost like computer memes or something, you know, suggest the idea that, wow, this is something interesting. And people, even though they might go on with their everyday lives, you know, they don't forget this. And it's on the news again. It's like, oh, wow, you know, this is like that story we heard last week or last month. So.
Well, you make a good point, and I know you're only on for an hour, and maybe we don't have enough time to investigate this point. But that is something that really, you know, fascinates me, is the fact that not only through science fiction, be it film or books or audio pieces, magazines, but also, you know, tiny little bits of technical information let out at the right time. Okay, maybe we admit to this kind of technicality. Mm-hmm. Maybe we admit that there are more than one dimension. Maybe we admit that we have been communicated with by aliens, but we're not going to admit any more than that. It does sort of kind of acclimatize the people so that this Brookings Institution all-out global panic and the fall apart of the religious world doesn't happen. That people are just sort of warmed to the idea over a period of decades, and then the truth is out, and you don't have this social destruction that we've anticipated.
Mm-hmm. No, I would fully agree with you on that, and I think one of the points that sort of really typifies that I mentioned in the book is that how in the last couple of years or last decade or so, NASA has been working very, very closely with the Vatican on outer space issues. You know, the Vatican actually has its own observatory, has a deep interest in outer space and astronomy, and they've been more and more vocal in the last few years about how, you know, in their view, it's okay to believe in aliens and it doesn't have an impact, a negative impact on, you know, the Catholic Church, etc. And of course, when you're dealing with religious bodies, they have most of them have huge followings. So if somebody within the Catholic Church says it's okay to believe in aliens and it's actually has no adverse effect on our teachings, millions of people get that message, literally tens and tens of millions of people. And the fact that, you know, NASA is working very closely with them, again, you have to wonder if this is all part of this kind of drip-feed scenario, you know, of finding the best way to target as many people as possible at once with a few tidbits of data here and there.
Well, yeah, I get that. Okay, it's all right. We're no longer excommunicating people for believing in Martians. It's okay. It's been
official. Nobody's going to get burned at the stake.
Exactly. So, you know, when it comes to this face on Mars, though, actually, I haven't heard anything, you know, new about it in a while. I always wondered why those guys down at JPL don't build, you know, one of their $25 probes, launch it over there, and let's get a ground view of this thing. Come on, let's. NASA's short on money. Surely they could, you know, get a lot of a public support if they do something really fantastic like this.
Mm. Well, I think, you know, I think there's several things to look at. I mean, you know, on the one hand, if there is no sort of secret space program, then one of the problems is that we've never really been back and done a truly in-depth search of the area. Yes, there have been overhead photographs taken, and some of them, you know, have been degraded, etc. And there have been allegations that some have been deliberately degraded to make the face look less like a face. I think there's also the possibility that, you know, it's a case of not wanting to search for fear of what they might find. You know, it's like, what if they really do find hard evidence of some alien civilization, that their structures are so similar to some of them on Earth that it would actually have an impact on significantly changing how we view our personal history. You know,
it may not be as simple as saying,
oh, yeah, this was built by Martians. It could be, but it also impacts on our history as a species and could possibly change everything we know about us.
Well, what do you think that impact would be?
Well, I think the impact could be that because, you know, a number of researchers of the face on Mars have pointed out the deep similarities between the Martian structures and Egyptian ones and Mayans, it may suggest that what we think we know about our beginnings as a civilization aren't exactly what they are. you know, what if it was really proven that we have our origins in a Martian race that came here and seeded itself on our world as theirs was close to, you know, dying, and that all our legends of, you know, the gods coming down and, you know, et cetera, are based on distorted legends of Martian astronauts. You know, imagine how that would impact upon the religious bodies of the world if they found that out.
I'm trying to imagine that. I guess I'm going back to my mother-in-law. You know, if she doesn't even believe we ever landed on the moon, how is she going to accept the idea that maybe we were anciently colonized from another planet?
Well, this is the thing, you see. I think a lot of people, you know, belief is a powerful thing, and non-belief is a powerful thing too. You know, it's like you have as many people who believe Kennedy was killed by Oswald that don't believe it. And I think part of it comes down to people don't want to believe somebody in government might try and assassinate the president, you know, in the same way that people are like, oh, well, they wouldn't lie to us about this or that because it's the government, you know, we're the people. They wouldn't do that, you know. And I think a lot of it is just purely people just don't want to think that they're being manipulated, and so they deny. And some people do, you know, some people are totally full-on skeptical that of anything that comes out of government's mouth. My own view is that, you know, whatever governments tell us, we should listen very carefully, but we should also then evaluate the data for ourselves. You know, don't blindly accept it or deny it, but just see where the evidence goes on each relevant individual.
I mean, we're used to being deceived every single day. I mean, you go to Walmart and find something on sale, and you say, hey, wait a minute, I thought they were everyday low prices. What are you doing to me the rest of the time now that it's on sale? You know, of course, we're used to it. We expect it.
No, you're right. You're right. And I think, you know, I think also there's the fact that, you know, I think if it was just, oh, UFOs exist and aliens exist, we may have been told a long time ago. But I do think a lot of the secrecy relates to somebody in government, I think, or NASA or wherever, knows that to reveal the truth would also reveal groundbreaking things about our history and us as a species, our belief systems, and much more. And it's whether or not, in the view of the people who are hiding this data, we could handle it. Now, my view is that that's arrogant. You know, I think if there are profound stories about our history and culture, etc., that they know, then we should have a right to know. It shouldn't be the right of, you know, 30 people in government who are cleared to know the truth to tell us what we should know or not know.
Right. That's exactly why we have Nick Redfern out there. His website is nickredfern.com. The book is The NASA Conspiracies, The Truth Behind the Moon Landings, Censored Photos, and the Face on Mars. So I like the way you say groundbreaking. What's groundbreaking for Nick right now? What are you working on?
Well, I have a book out. I've actually just finished all the writing of it, and it'll be published in about 4 months. It's about the whole history of the Men in Black mystery. You know, who are they? Are they government agents? Are they aliens? Are they something else? And it's a study of the real-life Men in Black that were sort of portrayed in the Will Smith, Tommy Lee Jones film. And you're trying to determine who is it that's going around and silencing and warning UFO witnesses and researchers, etc.
Yeah, that's going to be great. I always wondered that myself. Why is it the first thing that happens? Even these third world countries, like, you know, even Bolivia, if they have a UFO landing or a sighting or some odd object show up from outer space, the first thing they do is cover it up. My goodness, look at the money they're wasting by not opening that tourist attraction. You know?
Yeah, that's a good point.
Be careful as you pass. There's a real UFO under the glass there. Yes. $5, please. Come on.
Exactly. Yeah, that could, like, boost the economy overnight. You know, put the Roswell craft on show or somewhere. You'd clear the deficit or whatever in a week.
My gosh. Yeah, you clear the deficit in a week, and you could do a photo documentary of every single person coming in the door, and you'd have every UFO buff on the planet there. No question about it. I think they're missing a great opportunity here.
Well, maybe if they're listening in, they'll think about it.
Oh, my goodness. All right, Nick, it's been a pleasure having you on the program. Thank you for joining us from wherever you are. And we look forward to
outside Dallas.
All right. Thank you very much. We look forward to the Men in Black story. We'll be hopefully the first to, or one of the first, right here on X Squared Radio. Thanks so much, sir.
All right, Cole. Thanks, Brooke. Thanks a lot.
Have a wonderful evening. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right, Earth Explorers, we're going to take a quick break. We ran a little long on that. That's because it was Nick. Important stuff. We'll play a little short musical interlude here. Not the whole thing. Hold on a while. Run over there in a second. All right, we got it. Welcome to the world of live internet radio. We'll be back in about 3 or 4 minutes. I know you recognize this. And welcome back to X Squared Radio, second hour. We're coming to you live from Western North Carolina. You're listening to the end credits from the movie The Abyss. One of the nice things about having a program like X Squared Radio is we get to consider some of the deeper, more poignant questions about the human race. Where did we come from? Why are we here? What's our purpose? Are we just spiritual beings lost in our quest for three-dimensional toys with which to fill our garage? Funny little worthless pieces of paper to fill our accounts with so that we can hand them on to our children? Or do we consider the deeper questions? What are we doing here? What are we doing with this amazing planet? So rare and so beautiful in the middle of the blackness of space. Are we being visited? Are we being cared for, watched over? Or are we being midwived through an embryonic process of our growth into godhood? And we wonder sometimes as we look at the news, how could we get it so wrong? How are we capable of such terrible things? And yet, even as the smoke is clearing, the shrapnel is falling to the ground, we can pause, consider the Creator and His blessings upon us for having survived yet another day. How can we look at one another and for one second have the least amount of guile for one another? One of the things I want you to realize as you listen to this program, as we end 2010 and begin 2011, is what is the worth of a human soul, and what is the degree to which you and I are perfect? I would maintain that you are perfect. You are absolutely yourself and can be nothing else. Everything that you have accumulated over the eons of your existence is lying just beneath your eyelids. All you have to do is remember. And maybe that's why we're here at X Squared Radio, to try to open those archives of your memory, open those archives of your awareness, help you understand that you can remember it all. You can bring it all to bear right here, right now, in one life, and you can make amazing things happen. That you can move mountains with that tiny little mustard seed of yours applied over and over again at exactly the right moment. We want you to be part of the program tonight. We've talked about some pretty amazing stuff in the first hour with Nick Redfern. Our phone number is here at BBS Radio to X Squared Radio with me, the host, Brooks Agnew, is 530-413-4511. Anywhere east of Earth, it's 530-413-4515. And anywhere west of Earth, 530-413-4520. And we're always welcoming those who are listening by cell phone. If you want to know how to do it, it's very simple. If you're going to walk out away from your computer, you don't have to worry about it. You don't have to miss anything live. You can call into 712-432-0075. Access code 318-116-pound. I've had a lot of fantastic mail lately. We have talked a lot about the subjects covered in the book Remembering the Future, the Physics of the Soul and Time Travel. By the way, let me put in here parenthetically, those of you that were waiting for your hard copy, it should arrive. The last of them have already gone out, at least from the surge that we had from our appearance on Coast to Coast. Sorry about the delay. We had several hundred in our library here in our warehouse. Those evaporated in about 8 hours. And we made a couple of more orders. Those went out as well. It rocketed to number 4 on Amazon. We appreciate the sales, and I apologize. We were totally unprepared to handle it. I do appreciate your patience with it. All those people who have ordered their books thus far should have received them or will receive them before Christmas. PayPal has, I think, done a fairly good job of getting the audio redirects to you. So when you buy the paperback from our website at rememberingthefuturebook.com, you should be redirected once you're in PayPal to the audio version. It is it consists of several chapters, which you can right-click and download, and you Mac users simply hold down the control key and then click it, and you get into the same menu where you can download those chapters. The audio is pretty good quality. You can listen to the entire book unabridged by listening to that audio version. If you didn't get the free redirect, just write me again, bagnew at x2-radio.com, and I'll send you the link. I hesitate to just put it on the website because then those who have not made a purchase are just going to, you know, copy the link and send it around to everyone. Not that that's already not going on out there, because certainly sales have fallen off. But if you've enjoyed the book, please, you know, share it with someone. Get them to patronize as well. All the proceeds from that help us stay on the air here. You know, this airtime costs money to come to you all around the world. And we also appreciate your phone calls participating. So for the next 2 hours, it's open lines, you and me. And I want to discuss the subjects that we've brought up tonight. The idea that there are UFOs out there, that there are aliens visiting our planet, or who have existed for a long, long time on this planet, but for some reason stay at arm's length. They fly, you know, just outside our reach, just outside our range. It comes down to two questions. They're either benevolent or they're not. Now, if they're benevolent, it is logical to think that maybe they would stay at a distance, that military governments, militaries all around the world would say there's no reason to go up and bother them. They're nice. They're friendly. No reason to disturb a hornet's nest. They come in. They visit. They watch. You know, they might tinker with us from time to time, but they're generally harmless, and they want our best interests at heart. The other is that perhaps they're not all benevolent, that some of them are malevolent, that they're hostile in some respect. And if that's the case, then the whole idea of abductions takes on a different air. It takes on a different light. The idea that they fly in and disable military weapons that are highly sophisticated, encrypted, and carefully armored against tinkering, and yet craft can fly in and take missiles offline and mess with radar systems and communication systems. The sovereignty of the airspace, at least above the United States, is absolutely paramount, and it is a direct constitutional duty to those in charge of the military to protect. And it appears that they're not doing so. We don't see a dogfight between UFOs and conventional aircraft above our skies. We don't hear in the papers about us shooting another one down or having been shot down. We don't see battles going on in the night skies or day skies overhead, for that matter. But we do see an active and universal effort to cover up every single footprint that might be left behind. Every probe, every item that might be dropped or crashed out of the sky. It doesn't matter what government it is, if it's Mexican, if it's Bolivian, if it's American or German or Russian, officials rush out there with their vacuums and their brooms and their barricades, and they cordon off the area, and they expunge any evidence of it ever having existed, and then what? And then nothing. No report, nothing happened here, you didn't see a thing. And the whistleblowers are few and far between. You know, I see the subject matter of what Julian Assange has let out. A lot of that has to do with warfare, with illegal warfare, with clandestine warfare that we have the right to know about, that people were killed, that ordnance that is illegal was dropped, that tactics that are unconventional and unacceptable for the human race were used. We have the right to know that because we need to hold people accountable for that. And when our enemies become our worst enemies and their friends become our enemies, it's because of activity just like this that happens. Now, I don't want to hear about the Hatfield and McCoy's argument out there. They did it first, and so now we're doing it. The point is we're on the higher road, and we're doing it, and it's not right. Somebody needs to lead the way to civility. Somebody needs to lead the way to a peaceful human race. The fact that we're being visited, and yes, it's a fact because it's a direct observation. It is corroborated by not thousands, but millions of people over hundreds of years, perhaps thousands of years. It is undeniable and irrefutable that we are, have, and will be visited by beings from other worlds or other beings who live on this world that evidently are not assimilated into our mainstream society. What do we do with that fact? Well, you tell me. 530-413-4511. Are they walking among us? Are they teaching in our universities? Are they working behind the scenes with our governments? Or is it, as we said in the second volume of the Ark of Millions of Years, the Nephilim and their co-workers are here and have been here for tens of thousands of years and work to keep the human race at war with itself, constantly working weapons back and forth, higher one-upmanship here and there, so that no one side gains too much of an advantage, but so that war is imminent and perpetual, and somehow it keeps us at each other's throats. Somehow we are able to dehumanize one another. No, we're not charging across the frozen tundra at each other with battle axes in hand. There's nothing quite so personal as that. We don't get to hear the screams. We don't get to smell the blood mixed with the grass anymore. Now it's a video game. Now it's a drone. Now it's an orbiting weapon that can be anywhere on the planet in 1 hour and do its deed of secrecy and destruction. Are you kidding? Of course we don't have weapons like that. Yes, we do. No, we don't. Yes, we do. So fear not, you're safe, as long as you're with us. So as we think about these things, these great questions of our day, and we concern ourselves with, gee, do I have all my Christmas presents bought? Did I put everybody on the list? Have I left someone out? Is someone going to be insulted because I didn't buy them something? I mean, after all, I do have to stimulate the economy. Don't I? And I would like to have a new vehicle, wouldn't I? I like that smell, you know, that urethane smell, that formaldehyde smell from the foam in the dash of my new car. Such a great smell of opulence, isn't it? Hey, Fred, have you seen my new vehicle? Wow, that's nice. Yeah, there's a whole culture built behind this. But is it who we really are? Is it what we should really be concerned with? What if we're not concerned with it? What happens to, oh my gosh, what happens to General Motors? I mean, General Motors can't go broke, can they? I mean, they're too big to fail, aren't they? I mean, if General Motors has a financial problem, the United States has a financial problem. Surely we need to feed more money to them. We just can't let it happen. Is this our planet now? Is it this delicate balance between the buggy whip companies and the governments? You know, I heard it said the other day that there's enough oil in reserve in the Gulf of Mexico and elsewhere on the continental United States that if we were to be bold enough as to go drill for it, and even bolder enough as to build refineries to handle that crude, we could be energy independent. In fact, I heard it said on the mainstream news just the other day that there's enough oil under the ground in the United States territories to pay off the national debt. But you know what would happen. We would allow them to drill for it, and drill they would. We would allow them to refine it, and refine they would. And the price would not change one penny. And the debt would get even larger, and the deficit would continue to go up, and we will borrow ourselves as a fraction of our gross national product, as we always have. That's what would happen, because they don't tell us the truth. They lie to us. They deceive us. Like a gambler who says, look, I just need to make this one more bet. If I could make this one more bet, I just know the winnings from this will pay off all my debtors, and I promise I'll never do it again. Just this one bet, and I'm out. I promise. How many times have you heard that? You might as well hear it from your congressman. You might as well have heard it from your senator, or worse, your president. Have no fear. Everything's under control. As long as you pay your personal bills, keep yourself relatively healthy. You don't have anything to worry. You haven't committed any crimes, have you? As long as you haven't committed any crimes, as long as you're a law-abiding citizen, you don't have anything to fear, do you? As we hand out our liberty as easily as we hand out our business card. 530-413-4511. 530-413-4511, right here on X Squared Radio. And I'm your host, Brooks Agnew. As we end 2010, what an amazing year we thought we were going to have. 2009 ended. Oh my gosh, what a turmoil. We were still sweeping up the broken glass from a crash of 2008. The entire economy fell flat on its tail. fuel prices shot through the roof, put millions of people out of work. Inflation rippled, is still rippling through our community. 2009, we tried to recover, and we just had high hopes for 2010. We thought, oh, great, we're going to get a new president. We're going to get a breath of fresh air in Washington. You know, we're going to have stimulus. We're going to have growth. Small business is the focus of the government's assistance. And it all of it, with the exception of maybe the last 2 weeks because we haven't seen it yet, has been a lie. $3.3 trillion of American dollars from American workers paid into the banks, hard earned by businesses coast to coast, border to border. $3.3 trillion vacuumed out of our economy with no remorse and literally given interest-free to the world's largest corporations. Corporations that were largely debt-free in the first place. They didn't need the money. But how could they pass up 0.0% interest? Come on. You could borrow the money, turn right back around and deposit it in the bank and make 2% to 3% straight across the board on it. Where's the risk? There's no risk. They just took the money from the taxpayers, put it in the bank, and they're earning interest on it. Why? Because Obama's financial people claim that the credit market needed to be shored up. What? Are you absolutely crazy? Worse, do you think we're crazy? Do you think we're stupid? Well, guess what? We are. Not only are we stupid, we're apathetic because we don't do a darn thing about it. And when the only guy in the whole world who's willing to do anything about it, publish it so that we would know what's going on, is surreptitiously arrested for what? For not wearing a condom during consensual sex? Are you kidding me? And he's going to be extradited to Sweden. You will never see Julian Assange alive again. You will never hear his voice. And one by one by one, those hackers will be hunted down, zero by one by zero, and new laws will be put into place to prevent the truth from coming to you. And you will just let it go. You won't even remember his name after the first of the year. You won't even know that there was one man who was willing to put his life on hold, maybe give his life, so that you would know what's going on in the dark. Nobel Peace Prize, I say. 530-413-4511. 530-413-4511. So 2010 came to an ignominious end. Thousands upon thousands upon thousands in each state, more than 3,000 in North Carolina alone, perhaps hundreds of thousands of small businesses, spent nearly everything they had trying to access the aid that this administration said was going to be available to them. None of them got a penny. None of them. Interestingly enough, though, all the technology that they submitted to the government is now included in the Chevy Volt. All the technology and new and innovative ideas that were set to change the new energy market forever, mysteriously, even down to the circuitry, even down to the theory of operation, without a patent, without a royalty, without a license, nothing, ended up in the Chevy Volt. Car of the year. Car of the year. I was a member of Major Automotive for three-quarters of my life. And I can tell you, Car of the Year is awarded to cars because the public has bought them and has experienced a level of high quality. Those organizations that call a car the Car of the Year are beholden to the public. They have subscribers that buy their magazines. They have patrons that go to their auto shows. Not this time. Not this time. General Motors got the Volt voted as Car of the Year, and they haven't even sold one yet. Who doesn't see the joke in this? Hopefully, 2011, because now we not only have a lame duck Congress that's going to be in power for about another 20 days, but we have a very mission-minded Congress getting ready to come into office that has a different agenda. And that agenda is to cut spending. That agenda is to return to the American worker as much of his money as they possibly can. Hopefully, this Congress that's coming in will follow through with what they promised to do, and that is to start cutting the size of government. That is to return things to their proper balance, which is not more people receiving food stamps than receive a paycheck, not more federal workers than any other kind of worker in the United States. This doesn't ring true with America. We don't work for the government. The government works for us. That's the way it should be. And that's the way it needs to return. Let's go to work, people. Let's know what we're doing, know why we're here, know what we're after, and let's not buy the company line anymore. As we look out into the night sky, and you behold the stars, and you behold the planets as they go by, realize that, of course, we're not alone. Of course, we've been visited. Of course, we are being visited. We will be visited. And that there's a reason why we're being visited. I had somebody tell me the other day they were waiting for the return of heavenly beings to set everything right. That has already occurred. We're already here. We're just lost in the marketing of the malls of the world. I'm just asking you to quit being mauled, people. Wake up. Stop buying stuff to make things happen. You can do it. You can do it. You've got the call-in numbers. I'm going to take a quick musical break, take something to drink. We'll be back in about 40 seconds with more X Squared Radio. Don't go away. Here we go. Thank you. Well, we work hard here at X Squared Radio to try to bring you those ideas and those thoughts that'll get your juices going. The rest of this hour, what I'd like to hear from you is, what things about 2010 did you like the most? I call this process in my training the roses, buds, and thorns. The rose is, what did I really like about 2010? What was a great thing about the year? A bud is maybe something that you didn't quite get done during the year, but you hope to get done next year, something that you've planted that hopefully is going to come to fruition, flower in the near future. And the other is your thorn. The thorn is something that really pricked you during the year, something that you didn't like, something that you wouldn't like to see happen again. So roses, buds, and thorns. Give us a call here at X Squared Radio tonight. Let's talk about that. 2010, roses, buds, and thorns. I'll give you some of mine to get you started, just to kind of give you an example. My rose for 2010 was getting to be part of the electric car movement. I'm going to call it a movement because there were just so many fine companies involved in this. Some of them were small. Some of them were just bits and pieces, components and things like that. So fascinating. Such wonderful inventiveness and innovation. It was fun to see a 1990s idea progress so quickly in so few years to become a viable, cost-effective vehicle that people could buy, own, drive, that would solve their commuting transportation solutions and see it happen in an affordable way. That was probably my most exciting thing for the year. I really appreciated the experience, and I wouldn't trade it for anything. The bud, of course, is that what we have put together does come to fruition, that somewhere in the very new future, those things that we have designed as a community do reach the American public. That's my hope, that the public wants them. There are hundreds of thousands of orders for these vehicles. They need them. They're functional. It'll save them money. We definitely want to see it come to pass, to create jobs, good-paying jobs for people here in this state and other states that will supply the companies. They realize that it'll take 10 to 12 major electric car companies to be able to meet this need. As the federal government doubles their tax on fuel, another 43 cents added to the gallon. Oil, as we predicted, made it to $100 before the end of the year. I doubt it will ever go back. I think by next summer you'll see it at $140, $150 a barrel. I just don't see us being able to weather that. We're going to see inflation at such levels, it's going to be phenomenal. I just don't think people are ready to spend $500 or $600 a month on fuel to drive back and forth to work. It becomes cost prohibitive at that point. My thorn, of course, for the year was discovering the deception in the Department of Energy. I can't tell you how disappointing that was. I believed them. I had faith in them. I like you, was completely duped. And maybe it didn't cost, well, indirectly it cost you too, but you know, it cost us everything, as it did several companies, and that was very disappointing. So that would be my thorn for the year. On a personal note, maybe I would like to see a more awakened approach to the entire thing by more people. I honestly think that those individuals that are sitting out there on unemployment 20 weeks, 30 weeks, 50 weeks, 80 weeks, 90 weeks, I think this is disingenuous. I think if you're an able-bodied American, able to work, you should be working. And if you can't find a job, then you make a job. That's just my feeling. Somebody that would sit around for literally 90 weeks and not do anything except hunt and fish and golf and sit around and watch TV and gamble. A lot of these welfare checks are being spent, cashed in Las Vegas. The cash cards are being used to withdraw cash in Atlantic City and Branson, Missouri, and also in Las Vegas. They're being cashed on cruise ships as people leave for cruises in South Florida. This is just disingenuous, people. This is not the American way. This is another country. This is another country. It's not the America that I know. It's not the human beings that saved this country. This is not the way to go. And, you know, of course, I've got the phone lines open. If you want to call in and defend it, you want to call in and defend to me that you've been sitting out there for 2 years without a job, I would be happy to hear it. I think we can work something out here. On the other hand, there are those of us that have been working very, very hard, one job, two jobs, three jobs, some of us five jobs, every single talent that we can bring to bear. We sleep when we drop. Take a nap, get up and do it again. Why? Because we're dreamers, because we're heading somewhere, we're doing something, we're trying to accomplish something. And the act of doing it is what is making us great. The act of doing it is what is bringing us satisfaction. So I would appreciate it if you called in, though, because my voice is getting tired, and it has been a long time coming, putting this program together, working on it for 5 years, building it up, exposing it to the world, building up the audience, getting you out there. I know that you're all out shopping and doing other things, some of you listening on your cell phone, and you can't get to be able to call in. But I would appreciate it if you called in, because we could just talk about anything. There is a lot going on in the news. This weather is not something that we expected. We've had really unprecedented snowfalls, and this blizzard that's blanketing the Midwest. I think within a week, if you try to fly coast to coast, you're going to see snow from one end of the country to the other. We're not even to January yet. It hasn't really got cold yet. But if you want to call in and talk about it, if you're out there in the snow and you have an opinion on climate change, I'd love to hear it. 530-413-4511. I know that's the off-planet number, but if you're out there stranded in the snow, you might feel like you're off-planet. West of Earth is 530-413-4515. East of Earth, 530-413-4520. We have a new studio help tonight, so it might take you a couple tries to get through, but no problem. Keep calling. A lot of people wonder why we have the name X Squared Radio. Why don't we call it the Brooks Agnew Show? I'll tell you exactly why. X squared is a function. Y is equal to X squared. Every number put into X squared comes out positive. That's why we always try to have a positive outlook on things. Yes, we talk about dark subjects from time to time. But we also talk about the fact that we can take control of it and make it positive, turn it to a positive way, and that's what we do here. There is one number that you can put into the function X squared that does not come out positive, and that is the square root of negative 1. Yes, it's a real number. It's imaginary. It's termed I, you know, like italics, small letter I. And that's why we don't call the program the Brooks Agnew Show, because I am not the subject of the radio program. Yes, we try to bring those opinions to bear, that training to bear, that education to bear, try to make the complex understandable and to bring back to a positive direction those negative things that, you know, come upon us as human beings. If you haven't been to the website, it's xsquaredradio.com or x2-radio.com. Either one will work. You can listen live like you're doing now, or you can access the guest list. And this is everyone that's been on X Squared Radio since it began in 2005. Of course, there's the online store. You can find all the books that have been written here, various products to support the Phoenix Science Foundation and the expedition. We've had a lot of people write about the expedition lately. I wish I had some news. We are talking to some funders who are used to funding motion pictures. and documentaries, and we will see what we will see. Hopefully we see something happen soon. We don't have much longer, about another year and a half, and that's it. No expedition ever, because the only two ships that are capable of making this trip will be retired at the end of 2012. No new ships on the way. We also have the archive programs you can listen to by becoming part of X Squared Radio at $2.50 for a single month or $20 for an entire year. It's less than the cost of popcorn per month. A single bag of popcorn, not popcorn for the entire month. And you can listen to any of the more than 1,000 hours of archives that are stored on our server. And if you're not an archive listener, it's easy to do just by hitting subscribe today. And you can participate in that and listen to all the fine authors, scientists, explorers that we've had on this program and that we will have in the coming year. And we also have a few pay-per-view movies. These are lectures that have been given over the last couple of years. So you can see what we're talking about, what we're doing, what we're showing people as we travel the world and make our presentations. On the right-hand side, you'll see kind of a Google-like text set of links from the expedition. Of course, you can advertise with us. It's easy to do, $25 a week. 13 weeks buys you a two-minute interview, vocal spots, or whatever it takes to expose your product to our listeners. And there are many. And the other thing I would really like to point out is that you can have me speak at your events. There should be a lot of conferences coming up in the next year. It's easy to do. All you have to do is click on the X Squared Radio contact link at X Squared Radio. It's on the right-hand side there. And I'd be happy to come anywhere, anytime. As groups as small as 20, doesn't matter. I'll come and talk about the book, talk about the expedition, talk about the origin and destiny of the Earth. I promise. You'll be happy with it. Lots of people are. We can also pick up Remembering the Future, The Physics of the Soul and Time Travel. This is my latest book, The Secret of Generating Wealth and Happiness from the Bounty of the Universe is unlocked in this book, easily explained. And it's also available on Kindle and Nook. And as soon as Google has their new reader, which should come out next week or the week after, we will take advantage of that as well and give it to you in that format. It's also available from Amazon if you want to pick up the paperback there. If you're used to it, you can find it as low as $11.95, shipped same day. Of course, you won't get the autographed version and you won't get the audiobook if you do that. You only get that if you buy from our website. It's the only way we can get your email address and get you into our system and keep you apprised of other things that are coming up. And you can also access a couple of our affiliates, of course, Vision Motor Cars, and also the Flower of Life meditation training that goes along, I should say, accompanies the book, Remembering the Future. We have the Flower of Life meditation mentioned in there. We are proud sponsors of Maureen St. Germain and her excellent audio CD that supports that kind of meditation, easy to listen to and walks you through the meditation. The other thing I want you to pay close attention to is at the bottom of the website is the Pythagoras conference link, and you get $100 off your ticket. This is in Louisville, Kentucky. You click the banner to register. This is next November. It always helps to register early. As you do, it helps us know who's coming and gives us the financial wherewithal to make the conference happen. 20 of the top speakers in this genre brought together in Louisville, Kentucky. We don't get conferences like this in the Midwest. Usually they're out in California. We find that we're in the middle of 73% of the population of the country, and it's nice to have that kind of presence out here in the midst of everyone where people can take advantage of it and not have to fly somewhere. 2 or 3 hour drive, we're within a 5 hour drive of over 3/4 of the population of the country. It's important that people realize that, you know, there's some great art being done out there. And it's coming from, you know, not mainstream places. And it's also taking, you know, coming forth from obscure places. With the advent of the internet, and keep in mind, it hasn't been out there very long. Since, what, 1996, it's really been available to just about everybody. 1998, high-speed internet's been available to most people. So 12 years. 12 years is not very long. Look where we've come in 12 years. It's because the speed with which this information reaches everyone. That's important. It's important to get it out there as quickly as possible. But it's also important to give as many people as possible access to it. And so when good art comes out, it's something we really like to see. It's something that it's inspirational. And I got a song from one of the fans. And I'm looking for it right now to try and play it for you. It is it's one of those that she wrote it herself, recorded it herself, and I'll play it for you as soon as I find it. In fact, I think what I'm going to do is play this other one so that I can have a couple minutes to look for it and not keep you waiting. I'm going to read you the words to this song first because you can't really make them out if you just listen to it. It's called Letters from the Skies by Civil Twilight. And, you know, you might not be into industrial rock, and you might be, but here it is. It's the words are kind of poignant. They're difficult to listen to, but if you can listen closely, you can get them. One of these days, the sky is going to break, and everything will escape, and I'll know. One of these days, the mountains are going to fall into the sea, and they'll know. That you and I were made for this. I was made to taste your kiss. We were made to never fall away. Never fall away. One of these days, letters are going to fall from the sky, telling us all to go free. But until that day, I'll find a way to let everybody know that you're coming back. You're coming back for me. Because even though you left me here, I have nothing left to fear. These are only walls that hold me here. Hold me here. The only walls to hold me here. One day soon I'll hold you like the sun holds the moon. And we will hear those planes overhead. And we won't have to be scared. We won't have to be scared. You're coming back for me. You're coming back for me. You're coming back for me. Here we go.
We were made to never fall away.
Twilight, Letters from the Sky. Really inspiring stuff going on out there, I got to tell you. It really opens the mind to listen to the passion and the music and the words going on with it. And so a couple of weeks ago, I made the open challenge. If any of you have created music, bumper music, and you'd like to hear it on X Squared Radio, as bumper music, you could set it in, and Laurie McLeod, calls herself Laurice, sent in a song called Wake Me Up. I'm going to play it for you now. I haven't written the lyrics down, but they should be self-explanatory. Pretty cool stuff. I like the fact that it's coming together out there, and lots of people are paying attention to it. Here we go. Well, there you go, Lori McLeod. Excellent. Wake Me Up. Glad to give her the chance to get that out there to you. We'll take a quick break. It's right at the top of the hour. We'll be back with the third hour of X Squared Radio right after this. Don't go away.
I am tired.
And welcome back to X Squared Radio. I'm your host, Whit Sagner. We're coming to you live from Western North Carolina. Our IQ window forecast about 39 degrees. Clear. Unlike what's going on up in the Northwest, the Midwest. Pretty incredible, all the weather that we're seeing up there. By the way, if you're interested in climate change, you can access some of the agenda that was covered down in Cancun. Global warming has become perhaps the most complicated issue facing world leaders. On the one hand, warnings from the scientific community are becoming louder, like right here at X Squared Radio, as an increasing body of science points to rising dangers from the ongoing buildup of human-related greenhouse gases, not just CO2, produced mainly by the burning of fossil fuels and forests. On the other, the technical, economic, and political issues that have to be resolved before a concerted worldwide effort to reduce emissions can begin have gotten no simpler, particularly in the face of a global economic slowdown. Now, some people think that implementing these conservation efforts or greenhouse gas reduction efforts would be very costly to the economy. Nothing could be further from the truth. It would be a redirection of some of the revenues and some of the expenditures from the current economy. But what would be a loss in one sector would be a gain in another. And in fact, it would be creating jobs and creating productivity. And what's better, it would be creating it in the right way. Global talks on climate change opened in Cancun, Mexico in late November this year, with the toughest issues unresolved and little expectation of a breakthrough on shaping an international treaty to curb emissions of the heat-trapping gases linked to global warming. By the way, while the conference was going on, Cancun experienced a record low temperature. Yeah, lower than has ever been recorded ever since time began. There was muted hope among those who attended the Cancun meetings. Well, one, that they'd make their way down to the beach, but that's not going to happen at 51 degrees. That small steps could be made on a decades-long journey to reduce the planetary threat of rising global temperatures. It's a funny thing to discuss when you have record low temperatures facing you at the beaches of Cancun, but keep in mind that these wild swings in positives and negatives are exactly indicative of climate change. So let's see what we can talk about here. Scott on line one from Florida, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Dr. Brooks. It's supposed to be 20 degrees here.
Waiting on Scott.
Morning.
We have a little patience with us tonight. We have a new producer who's getting his legs, and it's a very fast pace in the production studios in Paradise, California, because there's a lot going on. Scott, are you there?
Yes. Can you hear me? Can you hear me? Can you hear me, Dr. Brooks?
Well, we'll wait a couple seconds for Scott. He'll jump in there. The United States and China had significantly narrowed their differences on the verification of reductions in greenhouse gas emissions, according to officials in Cancun in early December. And I find this stunning because there's such a huge difference in the way China operates its equipment, the way their plants and things are regulated, and the way they are here in the United States. No comparison whatsoever. All right, let's see if we got Scott there now. Scott, are you
Dr.
there?
Dr. Brooks, can you hear me? Can you
all
hear me,
right,
Dr. Brooks?
I can hear you now.
Okay. It's supposed to be 20 degrees here tomorrow morning in Daytona Beach.
Well, that's not right.
I know. What's going on here?
I mean, I've seen it cold before in Florida, but that's usually in late January, not in early December. What's going on?
Well, we got the cold front moving in. We had the rain, as they predicted, and we have the wind going on outside. I just took a walk earlier to kind of get a sense of things, and it wouldn't surprise me if it were early 20s tomorrow morning. What concerns me is that homes in Florida are not designed for this, which requires more energy usage. And I make it a conscious effort myself not to use a lot. Like, I turn lights off. I only use one light at a time. And I'm right now hesitating on turning the heat on until it gets really cold so as to conserve. I mean, I guess it starts with each individual. But it doesn't look, you know, if this is the beginning of it, we didn't have that much of a break between last winter and the summer either. We had like a few weeks of decent weather, and then it went into blazing heat. And we had that heat pretty much solid through the summer. And now we had about a month or so in between the summer and the cooler weather. But it was in October, early October, where it got down in the 40s, which for here, that's, you know, when we ever had that. It hasn't rained. It's all dry looking. The grass is dead in a lot of places. Trees are dying. But yet we also have the first autumn I've ever seen. I've lived in Florida most of my life, and this is like the first time you see gold and green and orange leaves on trees.
Wow.
It's quite fascinating.
Yeah. That's like living in North Carolina. I mean, yeah. Here we had 90 days over 90 degrees, which is very, very rare. I don't ever remember. In fact, I don't think in history there's been a longer stretch of high temperatures. And then right after this summer, which, you know, literally, you know, you go to work at 4:30 in the morning, it's 85 degrees. You're going, hey, something's wrong here. And then right after that, we had the second earliest snow skiing opening in history. So, and then my friends out in Salt Lake City, this last winter, they were skiing on the 4th of July. Skiing on the 4th of July in Utah. Unbelievable. They had the longest ski season on record. This is since ski slopes have been built in Utah. And Idaho never even had a summer. It barely had a day over 80 degrees. So it's clear that weather is not behaving like it normally behaves. The patterns are not like they normally are. Now, you could blame it on the sun. You could blame it on sunspots and blame it on, you know, the fact that other planets in the solar system are warming and all of that. And I think that's perfectly fine. But when you look at the skies above the cities in our country and you see this choking cloud of smog, and every single vehicle that's out there has got a catalytic converter on it. And then you go to Shanghai and you see a city of 30 million people. And the pollution is so bad that it has actually etched the glass on the skyscrapers. You can't even wash the glass clear like you can in this country because the acid rain has etched the glass on the skyscrapers.
That's China.
Yeah, and here they are in Cancun discussing what they're going to do to reduce greenhouse gases. Talk about being disingenuous.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm if I'm to offer anything out, I think, you know, the future is right out there, as you say it in your book, and, you know, it's up to us to choose. I think this might help the general listeners out there from what I've discovered from my own experimentation with manifesting future reality is to go for the passion, to go for the creativity, to go for the productivity, to go for whatever that we do to be done in an exciting and enthusiastic way, to go for those. And then to put those out, to imagine, okay, a week from now, I will have had more passion in my life, or something will have happened in a more creative way than I think it's going to happen, or, you know, I'm going to have had a much more exciting week than I thought. Something's going to happen out there that, by putting that out there, that then it happens. It's like it's paving the way for something better in our lives to come through than what we were expecting. And by
I would try to be as specific as possible with that too. If you're going to put a dream out there, don't just say something like, "Well, look, I want this week to be better than last week." Put something specific out there and make that resonate.
Yes, I try myself not to focus on too many forms, because then it becomes like I expect those forms to be there when those might not be the forms that bring the other.
That's a good point. You know, we as humans tend to kind of want to tell the universe how we want it to be manifested.
And then it doesn't happen.
By the way, $1 million delivered along the way, I think that would be nice too.
Or at least to feel the excitement of it, or the fulfillment of it, or the something like that, then it could become more of a, well, what I really wanted was happiness, or what I really wanted was some inspiration, or somebody to say something showing appreciation, you know, that sort of thing, or understanding. And that's what tends to fulfill me. I think money's great, yeah. And I think in the business sense, we need it. I mean, we've got to have it in order to make it happen. I've been listening to, there's a Galexis CD out there. Galexis, they were on BBS radio for a while, but they have a healing night once per week, and they put out a CD on healing your relationship with money. And I was listening to that one pretty much for a whole month while driving around, and that was helpful in terms of getting a sense of that money is basically a frequency, it's an energy, and to look at it that way, and to work with the various aspects of the self. They go into detail on the child's relationship with money, the adolescent's relationship with money, the young adult's relationship with money, and the adult's relationship with money. And it's been helpful. Very helpful to me to see the perspective there, and see how each will play in, where the child will be rather fearful and step into the victim role and worry about money, and then the adolescent will kind of develop an attitude about it, and the young adult will have great dreams but not know how to manifest it or what to go do if it were to manifest. But it takes the adult to maintain it.
I think a lot of times, like where the energy goes on this whole climate change thing and manifestation, is I hear, you know, the government, and I hear some of the conservative talk show hosts say stuff like, you know, if the enviromaniacs are allowed to have their way, you know, we're just going to go bankrupt, you know, and that may be true, but in a sense, from the sense that. The buggy whip companies, the people that make the belching smoke that goes up into the atmosphere, may go broke. They might go out of business. I say, so what? You know, if they're replaced by companies who are putting technology into place that allows us to be much more efficient at gathering energy from the sun or from thermo or from the wind or from various chemical or even algae methods of generating that energy, then and these are things that would combust cleanly, that would not add extra CO2 to the atmosphere, or whose byproducts would be very beneficial to the society instead of, you know, oh, we just have to overlook the fact that we're belching CO2, carbon monoxide, nitrous oxides, and all kinds of other poisons into the air, which when mixed with water turn into acid and can etch steel. And no telling what it's doing, you know, to the ground. I know if you go to the Great Smoky Mountains and you go up to Mount LeConte, you'll see what happens to trees that are exposed to acid rain from coal-fired power plants. It kills them.
Mm-hmm. And with that, over the past 10 years, I've noticed a dramatic change here in Florida, having lived in the same place where the sky isn't clean anymore here. Where it used to be, being in a peninsula, you know, that the chance of cleaner air are greater. However,
sure.
The clouds are brownish orange a lot of the time. They're not billowy white as much as they used to be. You know, we've got some Air Force activity south of here in Brevard County that leaves trails. We've got, like I said, the clouds are tending to... they're not billowy white. Like when I grew up in Central Florida, it was, you know, you go out on a winter day and it'll be beautifully clear blue, kind of like the way documentaries of Easter Island look, you know, where you have no pollution around an island and you see this pristine blue sky around you. That's the way it looked. And now it doesn't look, it's like a baby blue and kind of a brownish tinge to it. And if they're clouds, they tend to be, if it's not a windy day, the clouds tend to have like an orangey, and I'm not talking about sunrise or sunset, I'm talking about the middle of the day.
Yeah.
Clouds have an orangey-brown look to them.
Well, and when we bring it down to money and we say, oh, well, pollution controls are reducing our CO2 output would take us out as a world power, nothing could be further from the truth, because the technologies that go into place to either prevent making these in the first place or would clean them up before they get into the atmosphere also create jobs. So it would be a switch from one kind of job to another kind of job, but the productivity would still be there. And the good news is that we would then be living in harmony with our planet instead of living in spite of our planet, hoping that Mother Nature will just clean up the mess. But I think you'll agree that every once in a while, Mother Nature has an allergic reaction, and she tends to scratch. And when that happens, we have Katrina, or we have something else like that.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you, Dr. Brooks.
What's that?
Thank you.
Oh, you're very welcome. Thanks for coming on. I always
sure.
like to hear your thoughts.
Talk to you later.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
So when we think about these things, we think about the growth and the change of the planet. We think about our the community, the planetary, or shall we call it galactic community in which we live. If another race were to come in and look at the way that we treat our planet, I think that they would be upset. In fact, I had a really strange dream last night. And, okay, it's really strange. That oil is the stuff from which monsters are made. And that when those who left us here come back and find out that we've dug half of it out of the planet and burned it, When they get back, they're gonna be mad at us. I think that, you know, for a while, when you're a caveman, you gather up dry sticks and you make a fire and you stay warm and you cook your food, and then you get smarter about it and you realize you don't have to burn wood to do that. You can burn something more efficient. You can burn natural gas. You can burn oil. And when transportation needs get satisfied with that, you can burn it as well, but you continuously advance. Now we're at the point where we don't need gasoline as a fuel. we can get around in short distances anyway, commuting and things like that, without gasoline. You know, someone asked me the other day, why would you want to stop using gasoline? I mean, it's such an efficient fuel. You just go to the station, fill up, drive till it's empty, and put some more in. You think that's efficient? Burning it to get from one place to another and having to refill, it really just creates a revenue stream for those who control the revenue behind that gas. But what if there was a way to do this with electricity where not only for a fraction the amount of energy cost, but for zero pollution, you could make all those little commuting trips without that? That seems to be more responsible. That seems to me a better representative of being a citizen of Earth. And if we were to represent ourselves to a race coming here from another world, we could say, yes, we did burn oil for a while, you know, till we got our legs and we understood better technologies. Now we don't burn it anymore. It makes a lot more sense not to burn it anymore. It has other better uses, like for plastic and fibers and dyes and adhesives and all kinds of things that will last and last and last, provide us some durability with it instead of instantly vaporizing it under pressure just to generate enough power to get from point A to point B. That just doesn't make any sense at all. So at least it doesn't make sense now for us to do that. And, you know, in our first hour tonight, we had Nick Redfern, and we were talking about the NASA conspiracies. And we talked about how NASA was one of those iconic organizations that we expected the highest of integrity. You know, when an astronaut stood before the camera and he put his hand over his heart, or he saluted, or he walked off onto or off of that spacecraft, he had our utmost respect. He was putting his life in harm's way so that he could explore other worlds and bring that information back to us. We held them in the highest esteem. And it appears they have betrayed that trust. They have covered up the truth. They have kept the truth back from us, things that they have discovered on our dollar, and they're not sharing with us. That betrays the trust. That reduces our respect, not only in NASA, but also in the faith and credit of the United States of America. And it's having its effect around the planet. Other countries are no longer having faith and confidence in the faith and credit of the United States. It is an accumulation of all of these breaches of faith and these violations of trust and these monumental efforts to cover up the truth, to bury the facts, to destroy the messengers. And if putting them in jail is not enough, they die, and their families, and those who know them. And when you go back and look through the records, whether it's the Barons or any other, you know, individuals who are whistleblowing, trying to bring this information to the public, they're summarily dispatched, just as Julian Assange is being dispatched right before our eyes. Right now he has been, you know, arrested for the most trivial, inane, incredibly trumped up and hollow charge one could think of. And through legal gyrations, pressure, and bribes, he'll be moved to Sweden. And then he'll instantly be extradited to the United States and be tried not as a person who exposed the truth of dirty little secrets that were done in the dark that cost innocent people their lives. No, he'll be tried as a spy. He could be jailed for life, and he could be shot. And I think that the man deserves the Nobel Peace Prize to have exposed the treachery, the debauchery, the falsehood, the evil doings of officials of the United States of America and other governments. They should be held accountable because they did do the deed. They did it and they weren't caught. And then they did it and they were caught and they were exposed to the people. Now it's time for the people to take their role as owners of the government and remove these individuals from office, vote them out, ask for their resignations. Peaceful, legal process of removing these individuals from our trusted positions, from our positions of honor. These individuals, Hillary Clinton and others, have dishonored that position and need to be removed. And they need to be removed immediately. Disgrace them? That's up to you. Revenge? That's up to you. But removed and out of the way, out of the ability to continue to represent we the people immediately, if not sooner, please. And we need to reveal the truth to the American people and the people of the world. We are being visited. We have been visited. We have been influenced. There is a possibility that there are colonists from other worlds living here. Some of them are in plain sight. Some of them are hidden because they need to be because of their appearance. They wouldn't be readily accepted in our society. Others, because they're too bright of a star to be walking among us. We would not accept them, but we would reject them. It's just as if Jesus were to come back today and announce that he would Jesus was Jesus and we believed him, we would most assuredly crucify him and we wouldn't take 3 years to do it. I doubt he would last for 3 days in our society. What have we become? What can we become? Anything we desire. For good or for ill, it's true. And the formulas and processes are there. All you have to do is access them. We started a little early tonight. We started at 5:50 Pacific time. So we're going to end in enough time to be able to allow our producer to get the next program on, which comes after us. So we'll be ending the program at roughly 10:45. That's about 14 minutes from now. Love to hear from you if you want to call in. It's 530-413-4511. Of course, that's our off-planet line, but since a lot of people are out shopping, it appears they're not wanting to call in, even though there are lots and lots of people out there listening, and I can respect that. And perhaps tonight's subject is not one they're really experts on or want to break the flow of things. Next week, we have coming on the program Len Kasten. He has done a tremendous amount of investigations into ETs. And so we're going to learn about the true nature of extraterrestrials next week. Yes, they're here. We need to know as much as we can about them so that we can, first of all, recognize them when we meet them. Second of all, realize what is our place, what is our possibility in the presence of aliens. If they're here from another world and were born here, they're probably a lot like us. If they're here from another world and they obviously have higher technology than we do, then we can learn from them. And it's not just governments that can do this, I can assure you. Governments are not going to share anything they learn from these individuals with us, but we need to know. We need to know. Our inventors need to know. Our smart people need to know. And all smart people don't work for the government, I can tell you that right now. We'll probably take the 26th of December off for Christmas. I will be traveling, but we'll be next to the phone, and we'll be able to present next week, and also, the first Sunday in January, and we'll have a live show then too as well. And next year we'll be racked and stacked with guests. There are just so much talent out there. And don't forget to access on the Web Talk Radio link at X Squared Radio. These are short 30-minute versions of the program. We want you to click there as often as you can, listen to the program, spread the word, The more you do it, the easier it is for us to play on the major airwaves. We also brought the story to you early in the show about the Navy's railgun. I don't know if you know the importance of this, because this railgun, you know, it doesn't have explosives. There's no cordite. There's no fuel that's required other than electricity. You know, it takes a few minutes for the coils to, or the capacitors to charge up when this thing discharges. It's like a huge magnet, you know, pulling things forward in a projected way. You've also seen it on roller coasters, electromagnetic motors or linear guides pulling it forward. This is the way a railgun works. And I don't know if you remember, but Jules Verne had an idea of literally shooting a capsule to the moon using a long-barreled gun. Now, it doesn't make a lot of sense to put a man in some kind of capsule that's going to accelerate as fast as an explosion might, you know, 0 to 5,500 feet a second and like right now. But electromagnetic railguns become much more practical because the acceleration can be controlled, can be brought up, the rate of acceleration can be controlled. Now, these rail guns are relatively short-barreled, but they're very accurate in the sense that the projectile can be guided easily. When this tremendous amount of power is applied, in this case to a 20-pound projectile, it's rocketed through the air at 7 times the speed of sound. That means that there are 7 sonic booms as this thing goes by. But if you're at the target, if you're at the point where this slug is going to strike that target, keep in mind, you're not going to hear anything. You're not going to see anything. You're not going to detect any kind of launch whatsoever. All of a sudden, 20 pounds is going to hit your general neighborhood going 8 times the speed of sound. That is 33 megajoules. A joule is a watt second, by the way. 33 megajoules of force out of the barrel. 1 megajoule is a unit of energy roughly equal to the energy generated by a 1-ton vehicle moving at 100 miles per hour. That's 2,000 pounds moving at 100 miles per hour. So 33 megajoules is 66,000 pounds. Okay? 66. Let's do the math here. We got a 20-pound projectile. All right, so 1 ton is 2,000 pounds, moving at 100 miles an hour. So 33 times 2,000 pounds would be 66,000 pounds. Exactly right. So 66,000 pounds of impact. 66,000 pounds moving at 100 miles per hour. That's really unbelievable. 33 tons at 100 miles an hour. By the way, no explosion is necessary. No shell, no casing, no boom. The range, 100 miles. 100 miles. That means you could be sitting in the safety of your living room, shoot this gun, and 100 miles from the point to where the gun is, which could be identified with a drone, no one at the target would hear or see a thing. And the Navy's response, quote, "It's exhilarating," Elizabeth DeAndre, the railgun project's strategic director, told the Post. Exhilarating. That gives a new definition to killing people and breaking things. We'll break it with a railgun. By the way, it does say in the article there are no plans to immediately put this into military use. That is the battle use, sure. And don't tell me the very latest drones are not being used out there, because they are. Some of these drones are capable of supersonic flight. They can be delivered from space anywhere on the planet in 1 hour. In 1 hour, can deliver a conventional weapon right down the tailpipe where it needs to go. A minimum amount of collateral damage, absolutely surgical precision without making a sound. Nobody would even know they're coming. You wouldn't hear the sonic booms until after the deed was already done. The good news is that there would be a good fingerprint on it because no one would be able to fire a weapon like that. Everyone would know who was the cause of it. And it's not that difficult to do, to build these EM weapons. By the way, you remember a movie out about this called The Eraser with Arnold Schwarzenegger. Yeah, that was an aluminum slug that this handheld rifle would launch at probably Mach 5, Mach 6, way, way, way higher muzzle velocity than you normally get with a regular projectile, with powder being the, or cordite being the driving force behind it. As we get closer to Christmas, you know, keep in mind what it's about. It is about the celebration of new life. It is a celebration of the birth of Jesus Christ, even though everyone knows he wasn't actually born on December 25th. It is about the celebration of giving one person to another. I would challenge each listener to this program to look for a good deed, a good turn to do each day. That would be a good goal to start the day with as you head out of the house to go get in the car, get on the bus, or walk to work. You say, I am manifesting someplace where I can do a good turn today, someplace where I can help another. Now, you're not going to be overwhelmed. You're not going to be like being in a country full of beggars. Every single person that comes to you wants $20, and you're like the yes man handing them out because you manifested it. You manifest a good turn to do for the day, whether it's help somebody with groceries, change a flat, give directions, make an introduction to a manager so someone can get a job. Those are the kinds of things I'm talking about. So let's spread the word. Keep it going. Don't forget to visit our affiliates, 1-800-PREPARE.com. Don't be caught up there in the Midwest driving around in a car without some kind of emergency preparedness stuff. You want to go look at it, go look at some YouTubes about the cars being stranded up there. All kinds of cars, Impalas and Priuses and even Hummers getting stuck in the snow up there. You don't want to be out there in the snow trying to shovel yourself out of that in a skirt or in the jeans in a light jacket with no gloves on. Been there, seen that, out on the freeway in the middle of Kansas. That's not where you want to be. You want to have an emergency preparedness survival kit in your car, and you're going to get it by going to 1-800-PREPARE.com, 1-800-PREPARE.com. Our friend Paul Faust and his firefighter buddies have put together this website. It allows you to buy the stuff that you need, high-quality stuff, food that will last for 25 years without ever touching it. It comes completely in a case that you can throw over your shoulders if that's what you want. Some of it's dehydrated. Some of it's meals ready to eat. Flares, solar blankets, candy bars, the kind of stuff that you need to survive and do so with some comfort. Of course, there are much more advanced kits that you can get. But if you're looking for something for the car, you're looking for something for that front closet in the house so you can grab it and go. Or better yet, if you have a neighbor call you up, you can grab it and give it to them. There are ways of doing this, and it's so affordable. Free shipping. And if you put my name, Brooks, B-R-O-O-K-S, in the checkout window, you'll get an additional 10% off. How cool is that? Come on, people. 1-800-PREPARE.com. Those of you that have purchased the book and are trying to practice the meditation, in print is wonderful. At least you got the mudras, you got the procedures. If you want to know how to breathe, you want to know more details on it, you can get some of those details from Maureen St. Germain's CD. This is an audio assistance to the meditation. It makes it really good. She's a master teacher, and it will accompany you as you as you progress forward in your meditation in the book. Also this in, we are going to have in February 3rd through 5th, February 3rd through 5th, we are going to have Flower of Life meditation training in Concord, North Carolina. That's right. So if you've read the book, you want to come take a class from Maureen and I, all you have to do is make your way to Concord, North Carolina, central to almost everybody on the East Coast. February 3rd through 5th, check it out. We'll have a link at X Squared Radio. We'll have a link at rememberingthefuturebook.com. Let's go to the phones one more time. Brian from Arizona, welcome to the program.
Hey, Dr. Brooks. Hey, I was just off subject. I was just curious if you're familiar with post-glacial rebound.
I've heard of him, yes.
Yeah, the Scott Owens, he has a YouTube channel, Believers Underground. I've been following him for the past 6 months or so. And it's a pretty fascinating aspect in that you don't need anything other than just the melting of the ice. And his concept is the melting of ice is from radioactive.
Wow.
Radioactive fallout layering in the ice for ever since, for the past 40 years, 60 years.
So this is fresh snow that's fallen on the ground, or are you saying that Arctic ice is radioactive?
Well, not necessarily fresh. It's just that it really escalated after Chernobyl. After Chernobyl blew, it really started escalating in that the all the that's when they started playing with the global warming game and claiming CO2. But his position is that it's radioactive fallout basically being spread around the world and into the glaciers, and that's what's melting the ice, and that it's just a weight and pressure from the water being redistributed around the world that's causing all kinds of chaos in the earthquakes and volcano activity. And if you were to go back and watch some of his old videos, he predicts accurately what's going to happen. When he predicts an earthquake's going to happen, earthquake happens. When he says these volcanoes over here are going to become active, they become active. And he's basing it all based upon just his what he can do by watching what's going on without actually having numbers. If he had a legitimate government numbers, like he suggests that he'd be a lot more accurate in his predictions. But it's a pretty fascinating aspect. I just wonder if you ever checked it out.
Is that Stan Dale?
No, Scott Owens.
Oh, Scott Owens.
Believers Underground is his YouTube channel.
There is a lot to be said about the radioactive spreading around the planet. I was doing my undergraduate, or actually my postgraduate work at Oak Ridge in Tennessee. And we were doing neutron activation spectroscopy. This is where we take a sample and you vacuum it or air pressure it over into a chamber where it's exposed to californium, which is, shooting off neutrons all the time. The neutrons stick to your sample, right? So then you vacuum it back over into this chamber and you listen with the scintillation counters for the neutrons to come off. And they come off with a frequency that tells you what the element is that you sent over there as the unknown. It's called neutron activation spectroscopy. The interesting thing about this process was the chamber. My instructor told me that the chamber was made of quiet steel. I said, what's quiet steel? He said, these are gun barrels that were made, big cannon barrels that were made prior to the first atomic explosions. I said, what does that have to do with anything? He said, after the first atomic explosions, Hiroshima, Nagasaki, et cetera, all of the iron in the world became slightly radioactive, except for those gun barrels that were made prior to the explosion dates. I thought, wow, that's really profound.
Well, that's just the position here. There's some studies out there showing that we all have radioactivity in our bones and in our teeth ever since, everybody, because it's been spread around the world and that the fall is continually going on. I suspect it has a lot to do with the continuation. It has a lot to do with the the depleted uranium over there in Iraq and in Afghanistan. That probably helps it spread a lot more too.
Yeah, all of this, you know, is of course different species of radioactivity. These depleted uranium, whether you're talking uranium explosions like we're using in Hiroshima, or plutonium explosions like we're done in Nagasaki, and we did over 600, and that's just us, 600 plutonium explosions, and the Russians did about as many too, and so did the Chinese. It's really unbelievable how much high-energy radiation there is floating around our planet.
Yeah, and it's all hot metal, and that's his position, is that that has all been spread around, and depending on where it's settling down, at, like especially after Chernobyl, the Arctic really got blasted with a ton of, because I think, you know, I can't remember exactly, so there was like 6 or 9 of those dome units in Chernobyl, and like half of them melted.
Yeah, my
number was, my but they melted down completely, and all that was dispersed into the atmosphere, and then that was spread around, and then landed into elsewhere throughout the Arctic, and that's just heavy metal that's always there in the ice core, and heats up the ice core.
Yep, my my instructor when I was at Tennessee Tech taking nuclear chemistry was Dr. Enzer, and Dr. Enzer used to be part of the Nuclear Regulatory Commission. And when Chernobyl exploded, he was on the American side that got to go over there and actually diagnose what happened. And he was amazed. All the firefighters that responded to that died. All of the workers at the facility died. All the security workers, helicopter pilots, etc., died. It was absolutely amazing, the scope of the destruction.
Yeah.
When that carbon,
it's far worse than wherever. Most of these disasters are always far worse than we're ever led to believe, as far as I can tell.
Yeah,
like the Gulf is far worse than we're led to believe.
Well, they said a lot of people have already moved back into the Chernobyl Valley, and they didn't think they'd be able to do it for 25,000 years. But still, I wouldn't be fishing for any three-eyed fish out of that stream.
Well, apparently, we also had a there was a nuclear disaster happened in California. I think in he was saying in the '60s it was far worse than Three Mile Island, and was just not it was not that big of a story. But apparently, it's got people living all around there, but they're constantly being irradiated, just like in the Chernobyl area. Like you say, you can live there, but you're probably not going to live a long life.
Was that San Onofre?
I can't remember what I can't remember what it was now.
That one's been there since like 1965.
Yeah.
Well, there's
it was like a China syndrome thing. Basically, I think that's probably where they got the movie from. Was that particular incident that happened? It wasn't really Three Mile Island, but it was the one that happened in California.
Wow.
Can't remember the name though. I just was wondering whether you were familiar with the post glacial rebound theory. And that he might be someone of interest to check out.
The post-glacial rebound. I do know that last year they did a monitoring of 50 of the top glaciers in the world, and they were all growing. But, you know, all that means is that the extreme cold is getting more extreme. And I think the extreme heat is getting more extreme,
right,
too.
Yeah, but I said you still have a major redistribution of the water. Yeah, with those glaciers growing, and you have other glaciers melting, and so you're losing the weight above the earth where those are melting, and then where the other ones are growing, you're increasing the weight over the plates in that area, which causes forcing distribution of the weight on the plates, which either sinks or raises the plates. If you lose a weight on top of that plate becomes lighter and rises. And apparently, Greenland's risen 2 feet in the past couple decades because of the melt off from there.
I hope it's not all geotechnic and it's going to all blow up like a giant Greenland volcano.
Yeah, who knows what's going on underneath there? There could be a major volcano underneath there, or one could develop. But I just thought that'd be something that you might want to consider in a future show.
I've made notes, so I'm going to do some investigation, see if I can find someone that's written something modern and credible on it, and we'll have them on the program. I appreciate it.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
All right. Have a wonderful week, my friend.
Hey, you too. All right. Bye. All right,
bye-bye. All right. That about does it for X Squared Radio for December 12th, 2010. I'm going to go ahead and play the ending now, give the chance for our great producer. He's done an outstanding job tonight to catch up and get the next host on. So we'll see you next week right here on X Squared Radio with Len Kasten as our guest. Good night, everyone.
It has been a great pleasure to have you here with us this evening. Tell a friend about us, because every Sunday evening at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, we bring you the best 3 hours of exploration into the mysteries of the universe and of the Earth. If you're not getting all 3 hours, send us the call letters of your local station, and we'll do the rest. Remember, Earth Explorers, that you are Source. Everything we do will eventually affect the universe, so try to do it on purpose. Reach out for the good in people and help it to grow a little every day. And before long, you will have saved the planet. This is X Squared Radio saying, peace, Earth Explorers.